Blog Talk Radio.
Mark the Rabbit Hole!
Broadcasting live from the fog of Neptune comes a waspily rabbit, exploring the unknown, traveling the astrological landscape, visiting secret worlds, dispelling the English language. So put on your bunny ears and hop down the rabbit hole with your host, Mark Matheny.
Time to awaken. Mark, Mark, wake up, Mark.
And good day, citizens of Earth and Canada. Today, our guest will be Nick Dagon Best, and he will be joining us shortly. Lots of energetic shifts happening right now, obviously, if you're still a member of the community on the little blue marble here. We had Jupiter enter Virgo for the next 13 months, actually, up through next September. That happened on August 11th. On August 8th, we had Mars enter Leo. Today we have a new moon in Leo, and we actually have a stellium going at the moment with the sun, moon, and Venus all in the early 20-ish degrees of the sign of the lion, which our guest today resides in. So he will share some of his lioness Nish with us today. There we go. Okay. Jupiter in Virgo. The last, if you want to look back at your diaries or journals or news events or whatnot, the last two times we had Jupiter in Virgo was August 27th of 2003 through September 25th of 2004. And the previous time before that was September 12th of 1991 through October 10th of 1992. So if you can look back at what was going on in your reality of at that point? One twelfth of you will be having a Jupiter return. as you know, if you're one of the Generation Xers born in the 60s, especially if you're born between 65 and 67, you have that tight Uranus-Pluto conjunction in the sign of Virgo. And you have a immense amount of power coming your way in the next year. In November, the North Node will move into Virgo also. We have next, those of you born in the 65 to 67 area, next May through July, as I've gone over this a few times before, next May through July you will have transiting Jupiter conjunct your Uranus-Pluto natal conjunction. Transiting North Node will also be conjunct your natal Uranus-Pluto conjunction. And transiting Pluto, which is in, apparently will be forever in Capricorn, will be forming a trine to your natal Uranus-Pluto conjunction. So that quite a bit of power there at your disposal. And for those of you born in late 67 through a good portion of 1968, on top of that, you have Jupiter conjunct your Uranus. Some of you have Jupiter conjunct your Uranus-Pluto natal conjunction, so you'll be having a Jupiter return as well. Unlimited potential for change and correction at our disposal. Generation X has been kind of looked at as a bit of a slacker generation, but it is apparently there's a few audio issues here. Hopefully everything is coming through on that end. Some of the buttons here were operating a little bit slow. So hopefully we have some questions in the chat room already. Lots of energy for change at our disposal here coming up. The good side of Jupiter in Virgo is it gives us the ability to change and adapt, being a mutable sign, and it allows us to make corrections where they need. One of the difficult things about Jupiter in Virgo is sometimes we can spin mentally out of control a little bit. Mercury ruling the central nervous system. We want to make sure we're not overtaxing our system too much, if you will. Just be sure there's plenty of time to fix things and to make corrections. Make sure you're taking care of your health, as that is one of the Virgo ruled areas. And remember, you're not going to fix everything in one day. It looks like our guest has called in here. Today we are lucky to have Nick Dagon Best. You can find him at Nick Dagon Best. That's Dagan is the middle part. .com. He has a really good explanation of astrology. Says astrology is a calendar that assigns a unique value to every moment in time. It is a clock with 10 hands that distinguishes every new hour in human history from any other. It is not so much a language as it is a kind of alphabet that perpetually spells out an entirely new word. Nick is a member for the National Council for Geocosmic Research. Nick discovered astrology on the morning of January 17th, 1995. He also has a biweekly podcast called I Love Astrology Podcast. It has a very, very interesting book called Uranus USA. It is a graphic, nonfiction comic astrology novel covering three different time periods when Uranus, the planet Uranus, transited the sign of Gemini. Looking back at the Revolutionary War era, the Civil War era, and the World War II through early Cold War era. And you can find that on his website. And you can also find that on Amazon.com. And so also, not to put him on the spot here, but we want to wish him condolences on a 47th birthday today. So we are going to bring on our friend Nick Dagon Best. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's morning for me. It's afternoon for you.
Yes. So thank you for spending some of your solar return day with us, and happy birthday to you.
Oh, well, thank you, Mark. I can't think of anything a Leo would rather do more than be interviewed on his birthday.
Yes. yes, appeasing the Leo lion gods here today.
Something's got to be thrown to the fire. Something has to go in.
Yes, so I have to tell you, one of the, I love your review of your book. It's, looking through some of your interviews, I believe you said it was one of the top three comic books written by a Canadian astrologer about U.S. history, and I think you've sold yourself short on that. I think it's probably one of the two best.
Oh, I don't know. I think I was probably being a little grandiose and extremely high expectations for what I might be able to achieve with that book. But I might only be fourth or fifth. I don't know. There's some tough competition out there in terms of Canadian astrologers who've written astrology comic books about U.S. politics. You know, just a drop in the notion.
Right. And you've also got a new Venus retrograde course available on your website. And of course, Venus is retrograde right now up through Sunday morning, September 6th. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I do. I've got a workshop video about Venus retrograde that discusses the phase in nativities, in transits, and also in synastry, like one person's Venus retrograde to another person's planet. The way we tend to do synastry, but sort of focusing in specifically on the Venus retrograde phase. Besides that, I've got other material on Venus retrograde that'll be coming out shortly. There's a lot to say about the subject. It's a powerful part of the Venus cycle. For folks who don't know, for listeners who aren't familiar with what we're talking about, the idea of Venus retrograde is not unlike when we talk about Mercury retrograde. What's really happening is the planet is at its closest to Earth, and so our relationship in terms of viewing it in the sky is a little skewered, and therefore, for reasons I won't get into, it appears to be moving backward, even though it isn't. And because the planet is so close, the expression of that planet in astrology is especially pronounced and emphasized.
Yes. So a lot of times we'll kind of get people popping in from our past.
Oh yes. That's certainly one of the things that happens. Venus has to do with social interaction. Venus has to do with social interaction and connections, and the things that please and displease us about each other. So it can be, you know, something superficial like a physical appearance, or it can be something very, very profound like a philosophical way of thinking, or it can be other sort of things that appeal to the senses. It can be good smells or bad smells. The smell of a flower has to do with Venus, but so does the smell of the dog poop on the sidewalk. They are both, well, you know, in other words, Venus is the stuff that provokes these sort of reactions, because you can interact with the smell of a rose, or you can interact with the smell of the dog poop. And they both sort of provoke, you know, but like you're not neutral about those things. This is what Venus does. And so in Venus's sort of changeable nature, this retrograde phase represents a change in Venus's phase and in how the planet is going to be relating to all the other planets for the next 9 months until the next conjunction with the sun. So for the last 9 months, Venus has been an evening star. That is to say, it has been following the sun in zodiacal order. It's been setting after the sun has set in the night sky. But now, over the course of the last few weeks, as Venus slowed down and went retrograde, now Venus is presently invisible to the naked eye because it's pretty much conjunct the sun, and therefore we can't see it. It's also, as we speak, conjunct the moon. As it happens, today is a new moon with Venus retrograde. So when Venus does finally emerge into visibility again in a few weeks, it will be as a morning star. It will be rising before the sun in the morning sky, as opposed to setting after the sun in the evening sky. So this is important as night and day. You know, as astrologers, we look at the sky, and we certainly understand the difference between night and day and the sun and moon. But after the sun and moon and night and day, I'd say that the second most sort of key and basic and fundamental planetary cycle to observe that is crucial in astrology is the cycle of Venus and this shift from morning to evening star phase.
Fascinating. Venus also kind of rules our inner values and morals and how we comfort ourselves, what we surround ourselves with. So it can kind of be an inner rehashing of a lot of things.
It does. It does indeed. The inner rehashing, I mean, that people's inner processes are unique to themselves. In terms of how we're responding to what the world is offering us, I mean, that's what Venus is. You know, these are the things that we respond to. We'll either be desiring them, or we'll be trying to escape them, or what have you, or they might be the bane of our existence. All these things apply in some way to our sense of Venus, our sense of right in the world. So this is really, in terms of where a given individual's chart is, this transit to planets in a certain person's chart are going to manifest in different ways from person to person.
Right. It will depend a lot on the individual's birth chart and if it's aspecting any planets directly. Venus is my chart ruler, and it's my Venus is in Taurus, conjunct my north node in the seventh house, so I tend to feel these Venus transits pretty heavily myself.
This is one thing that I do, for instance, on my podcast and something I do in consultations and in historical studies, is look at the cycle of Venus over the course of a lifetime. If you know about, for instance, Venus, there are five Venus retrogrades that occur in an eight-year cycle, and they occur in pretty much the same five spots of the zodiac. So right now, for instance, Venus has been going retrograde through Leo, just like it did 8 years ago. If you look in the summer of 2007, Venus was retrograde in Leo, just like it is now. And it was retrograde in 1999, in 1991, in 1983, in 1975, 1967, 1959. Every 8 years, Venus retrograde happens in pretty much the same spot of the zodiac. It gradually wanders over time from one sign to an earlier sign. But over the course of one person's life, it basically happens in the same spot. So one thing that's really interesting that your listeners might try and reflect in their own time is think back to where their lives were at in these other times in their lives, in the summers of 2007 and 99 and 91, because very often some kind of theme arises. There's some sort of parallel that any individual can identify in terms of real. What their unique experience of life was in ways that totally extend beyond the relatively limited language of symbolism that we communicate with each other as astrologers, but rather the sort of the visceral experience and the real memories of an individual and how this cycle can really sort of tie together events and show a person how their life has unfolded in a really unique and interesting way. By the time you turn 40 years old, you know, you've gone through five of these, five Venus cycles. It's not like Saturn or Uranus, you know, like we're one full cycle of Saturn is 29 years. So by the time we're 60 years old, we've gone through two of them, and we're just starting to figure out what that planet has to offer us. But Venus, also for the astrologer and the astrology student, is a marvelous learning tool, because the cycle is fast enough that indeed, like once you reach 40 years, you've been through five turns of this cycle, and you can really observe it. And observe its cyclical returns over the course of your lifetime, and derive a lot of meaning out of it, and not have to wait till you're in your sunset years before anything starts to make sense to you. So that's one advantage right off the bat. Also, Venus retrograde is a lot more rare than other planetary retrogrades. This is something that I enjoy about Venus and Mars, is that their retrograde phases only take up about 1/6 of total time, whereas Jupiter and Saturn are retrograde for about a third of the year, and you know, some of the outer planets for about a quarter of the year. So that's also an important distinction to keep in mind as well, that these cycles are unique. 1/6 of time is a relatively small fraction, and when you can trace these points relative to your own timeline, it's amazing what sort of emerges out of that. Hey, you still there, Mark?
Oh, sorry, I muted myself and forgot to unmute it. Mercury and Pisces, that's...
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Mercury and Pisces?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Guilty.
So is Neptune on top of it yet?
Actually, I just had, it's a little bit past it. So I've had two stations of Neptune that were direct on or within a degree of my Mercury. And I'll just say the experiences were bizarre to... that's the mild version. That was more than bizarre.
Interesting. Well, now Jupiter is headed towards there, and that'll be tweaking some things as well, I'm sure.
Yes, I will be having that.
The opposition.
Yeah, and then plus the, I'm sure, which will be a wonderful square from Saturn to my Mercury also.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the and then the upcoming Saturn-Neptune stuff. There is some really interesting planetary stuff coming up this year. What do you think about the 2015-2016 thing? Jupiter in Virgo opposite Neptune in Pisces, square Saturn in Sagittarius. Looks like a tough little T-square.
Yes. It looks. I read a great article, I think it was by Adam... Ellen Bloss, if I didn't massacre his name.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You kind of massacred his name, but yes, Adam Ellenbloss, yeah.
Okay. He wrote a great article about the last time that Saturn was in Sagittarius square to Neptune and Pisces, and that was during the Salem witch trials. So I'm hoping to avoid that.
I don't know. When Saturn is square Neptune, I think, you know, the thing about Neptune is it's those fantasies that collective groups of people can hold on to very, very strongly, you know? And I'm not saying this to demean anyone. This will be true, like, from, like, let's say, Star Trekkies, but also, you know, any people who sort of belong to a religious organization or who are really tied, like, sort of deeply tied to a national state or something like that. People get very wrapped up in Neptune. It's something unreal becoming real. And with Saturn square Neptune, it's like everyone's little fantasy world collides with someone else's fantasy world, and someone's fantasy world is going to have to be dismantled in order for a second person's fantasy world to exist. It gets a little tough that way. It's like colliding realities. It's like showing up at a hotel and the Trekkie convention is in the same place as the Star Wars convention and no one's having it. You know, there's like, people are fighting lightsaber against phasers and, you know, it's just a whole thing's a mess and someone's going to have to get out. So that's what I think of Saturn Square Neptune. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the first Trekkie convention, this is just off the top of my head, the first Trekkie convention was 1972, not long after Saturn was opposite Neptune, or right around the time Saturn was opposite Neptune. I find the world is becoming more and more like that, don't you? Like we're just,
Yeah, definitely. I think with the Saturn-Neptune square, I think it's definitely a clash of spiritual ideologies, at least. And because, Saturn is the structure of consciousness as well, as well as physical structures. So I think with that square with Neptune, I think it's making us restructure how we, view things on the spiritual and metaphysical areas as well as our, our belief systems, whatever religious or spiritual belief systems. I think it kind of makes you look at where your holes are in the big picture and how how do I have my reality structured and in what ways is it not serving me well?
Right.
On a spiritual, how do I go to work and pay bills and go to the grocery store and stuff and still keep my, my spiritual vibe, my spiritual centeredness while doing all the 3D stuff.
Indeed. So tell me, so you've got Mercury in Pisces. What's your sun sign?
I have so much water that I'm always 30 seconds away from drowning. I have a Sun, Chiron in Pisces, Trine Neptune in Scorpio, Trine Midheaven, Jupiter, and Moon in Cancer, all in the 20 degrees. So I have a pretty big water grand trine.
And do you have Saturn in Pisces and Venus in Aquarius?
I have Venus at zero Taurus, conjunct my north node in Taurus in the seventh house. I have a retrograde Saturn at two Aries in my sixth house, conjunct my fifth house Sun in Pisces.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay. So your Jupiter is really quite late. You said your Jupiter's in Cancer, but it must be like really late Cancer.
It's 24, and I'm actually on the retrograde. I was born within like 6 hours of a Jupiter station, so it had already gone into Leo and was retrograding back into Cancer when I was hatched.
And you have Mars in Scorpio. Is it retrograde already in your chart, or was it just about to go retrograde?
No, it's retrograde in my chart and won't go forward by progression for like another 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's conjunct my south node.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that 1967 Mars retrograde is really powerful. And it preceded a Venus retrograde in the summer, much like the one we have this summer. 1967 was a summer when Venus went retrograde from Virgo to Leo, just like this year. It's in that 8-year cycle. 1967 was also kind of like 1999 in that the Venus retrograde of the summer was preceded by a Mars retrograde in Scorpio that wandered into Libra. This is because the Venus and Mars cycles meet up on a 32-year cycle. Every 32 years, you'll find Venus and Mars in pretty much the same spot as they were on the date of birth. So if you look at your 32nd solar return in 1999, you'll see that Mars and Venus were pretty much the Venus would be in Taurus like it was when you were born, and Mars would be retrograde in Scorpio like it was when you were born. So that's an interesting way that you can like look at the Venus and Mars cycles and study them from period to period.
You know, that's really fascinating you bring that up, because when you were talking about the Venus retrograde cycles back into Leo, and you said 1999, I immediately thought of the August 1999 fixed grand square we had.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, you know, let me see, where we had Mars in, no, what did we have here? Mars in Scorpio, Jupiter in Taurus, Saturn in Taurus, Uranus and Neptune in Aquarius.
Yeah. And there was an eclipse.
Leo. Yes.
Yeah. There was an eclipse on August 11th, a really strong one that tied into that Grand Cross. And it was within, it was that same week of that eclipse and that Grand Cross that Vladimir Putin was first appointed to political office in the Russian Federation.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 1999 was a weird little summer, I think. Everyone was worried about the Y2K thing. It was a summer. The Venus retrograde summers tend to be very sensationalistic in the news, and the violence really seems to amp up. That's the thing about Venus. It's about social interaction. So people become a little more aggressive about asserting their view of how the world should be. And that does spill out in terms of ideological violence sometimes. Because that's the thing about Venus, is we're fighting for some kind of prize, for some kind of goal to shape the world in some sort of perfect way.
Yes, 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 I agree. Before I forget, I want to point out, Nick puts up really great posts on his Facebook page, looking at historical events like we're talking about here. And he looked at the astrology of the time. Like, there was one recently you put up about Bobcat Goldthwaite, who's a,
oh yeah,
what I feel is a great director now.
Yeah, no, he's really something else. Yeah, I have this little column. I'm going to return to it when I'm done with this video I'm making. It's a daily column called This Date in History, and I write a little astrological summary of an event in a famous person's life. So that event about Bobcat Goldthwait had to do when he set the couch on fire on The Tonight Show and got himself banned by Jay Leno on The Tonight Show. I don't know if people remember that, but sometimes it's little funny events like that, just, you know, going on national TV and setting a couch on fire and getting yourself banned. Pretty funny little story there. But, yeah, I have a lot of different stories. I'm interested in the history of politics and pop culture and the arts in general. So I study a lot of biographies and come up with a lot of little stories like that. So I like to share them. They're little ways that people can learn just a little, you know, a little drop of astrology at a time, I guess.
Right, and I think that's very helpful when you take you know, big events or historical events that people were familiar with, and you show them how there were similar energies or the kind of energies that were going on. Like in your book, where you look at the, you know, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, and World War II/Cold War
yeah.
era, where, you know, we had Uranus and Gemini at all those times.
Yeah, yeah. That's an old sort of astrological phenomenon that I think the first person to write about it was a guy named Dr. Broughton back at the turn of the last century. He made the observation about Uranus being in Gemini at the time of both the American Revolutionary War and the American Civil War. And Broughton lived in Great Britain, and he wrote a book about this. And he also had a student named Catherine Thompson, who became in her own right a very well-known astrologer. And she got married, and she moved to Boston. She married an American and moved to Boston. And in Boston, she taught astrology, and she had a student named Evangeline Adams. And Evangeline Adams became a very famous astrologer. She would wind up having her own radio show and big columns in all the newspapers in the 20s and 30s. Pretty much the most famous astrologer in the United States ever. And Evangeline Adams wrote predictions about the United States getting into a war in 1942 because Uranus would be in Gemini again. So my book is sort of a continuation of this observation that both Broughton and Adams and now myself are making about this 84-year cycle of Uranus. Uranus spends 7 years in each sign, in each of the 12 tropical signs, and a total of 84 years to go around the zodiac. And whenever it spends those 7 years in Gemini, the United States winds up fighting a war, the result of which winds up redefining the nation. The United States becomes an entirely new place every time this cycle is completed, as it did after the Revolutionary War in 1781, as it did at the end of the Civil War in 1865, and then as it did as the Second World War ended in 1945 in the early years of the Cold War, leading up to just before when the Soviets got the bomb in 1949, basically.
Right, right. That, I love looking back at the history of that kind of stuff. What do you see exactly? I gave just a real quick little thing on the last time that talking about past cycles. The last couple times that Jupiter was in Virgo. What kind of do you have any predictions or any trends you see in the political or pop culture arenas?
Yeah. When Jupiter is this close to the Venus retrograde, when Jupiter goes from Leo to Virgo like this, when it's close to the Venus retrograde, the social discord in the United States tends to be really, really high. In 1919, when there were racial clashes in over 50 cities, they called it the Red Summer. And that was a summer when Venus was retrograde with Jupiter and Leo going to Virgo. And then in the summer of 1967, like you yourself, you were born with Jupiter in Cancer in the spring. But by the summer of 1967, Jupiter was in Leo and Venus retrograde was going Virgo to Leo. And they called that the long, hot summer. They also called it the summer of love, but it was also the long, hot summer. There was a lot of racial tension going on then as well. So you certainly see it in the news right now. This is something that, you know, unfortunately surfaces when these two cycles interact, when the Venus retrograde cycle and the Jupiter and the summer sign cycle, when those two sort of interact like they are now. What we see in the news these days, these things tend to happen, right or wrong. Well, I'm inclined to say wrong, but, you know,
right.
They surface anyway. So there's that. I think there's also now Mars is in Leo to make things just all the more, potentially explosive. I think another thing to keep an eye on is prisons in the United States. I would not be surprised to see, so-called riots in a prison, protests in a prison, in an American prison within the next year. It's like a pretty big one. That tends to coincide with both Venus retrograde in the summer sign with Jupiter and with Mars. They're both known to happen. So with both of them at once, this is very rare for the Venus retrograde to be interacting with both Mars and Jupiter in one cycle like this, you know, one little phase like this, is quite rare. So I imagine things to be all the more aggressive and explosive in the coming weeks because of that.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And two, to kind of back that up, another aspect of a kind of show that I think is that Saturn-Neptune square, with Saturn being law enforcement and physical structures, and Neptune being prisons, asylums, places where people are locked away, having that square aspect between those.
Yeah, I think that's something that's ahead. These are special times we live in. Keep in mind, it's not all violence and craziness. The other end will be everything is being emphasized very, very strongly. So, you know, it's easy to focus on the violence and the hate because that sort of captures your attention, and that certainly will be there, unfortunately. But the great things are also sort of amplified. You know, the food will taste better while we still have it.
Right.
The flowers will... Yeah, you know, like this is... some of us might be eating our final meals, you know, depending on what kind of shape the planet takes. So, you know, those are good tasting meals.
Right.
And you know, I don't think anyone should be living in fear, but I don't see anything wrong with treating your next meal like it might be your last.
I agree. Just that, you know, you get more out of your life when you treat every day as your last. And you know, with the crazy planetary alignments we've had the last few years with the Uranus-Pluto square and all the other stuff going on, I mean, you're not promised another day or anything. And, you know, as far as the food thing, just remember, you know, cannibalism should be a last resort in most scenarios.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can really moralize cannibalism when it comes to that. I think everyone knows that... survival can come to such a point where, you know, it can come to such a thing as when two people are hungry enough, one person will kill the other and eat them, you know. It's not because we're walking around wanting to eat people, but desperation can make people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. So, I don't know. I'm not talking about a Jeffrey Dahmer situation, of course. I mean, you know.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
Well, incidentally, Jeffrey, this is something that works. Venus retrograde, a lot of the scandals come out, and serial killers are often caught during Venus retrogrades. Jeffrey Dahmer was caught in 1991 when Venus was just getting ready to go retrograde from Virgo to Leo like it is now. And then he was murdered in prison a few years later when Venus was retrograde. So, like, everything we know about the guy occurred when, you know, and John Wayne Gacy, he was also arrested just as Venus was going direct. And Ted Bundy, his murders follow a Venus cycle from retrograde to exterior conjunction. There's a lot of people like that. So that's another interesting thing to see. Venus retrograde does tend to be very sensationalized. You know, even like the political scandals are always Venus retrograde in the United States. The first time we ever heard the name Monica Lewinsky Venus was retrograde. The Watergate break-in was Venus retrograde. The Cuban Missile Crisis, the kitchen debates, the Bay of Pigs, like you name it. The first time that the Iran-Contra affair became known was Venus retrograde. Like everything, every single thing. Even I think when George Bush threw up on the Japanese Prime Minister.
Bless you. That was, bless you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that was the Bush incident was a literal retrograde.
So. Oh yeah, I see what you did there. Speaking of literal retrograde, President Bush Senior has natal Venus retrograde actually. He's one of the U.S. presidents who does. It's very common. You know, another amazing thing about the Venus retrograde cycle in American history is the deaths of American presidents. Here's a little something to chew on. William Henry Harrison, the first president to die in office, he died in 1841. He died when Venus was slowing down to its retrograde. It was at 25 Taurus. Then 16 years later, President Lincoln was murdered in 1865, when Venus was stationing retrograde at 25 Taurus. And then 16 years after him, in 1881, James Garfield was shot when Venus was post-retrograde, but still like in its phase, coming out of the retrograde, again at 25 Taurus. The likelihood of first presidents going that way is absolutely unheard of. And it gets a little crazier, because if you jump up to 1945, Franklin Roosevelt also died during that Venus retrograde. By his time, it was in Aries and not Taurus because it gradually moves back. But that's four U.S. presidents who died in the same Venus phase, retrograde phase, while in office. And then there's a fifth one, Eisenhower, who died in 1969 during that same Venus phase, but he didn't die in office. But that's five. There have only been 42 U.S. presidents, but five of them have died in this one Venus retrograde phase, which accounts for about 1/29th of total time. And even before any of those presidents died when Venus was pre-retrograde at 25 Taurus, Thomas Paine died in 1809 when Venus was pre-retrograde at 25 Taurus. The man who pretty much coined the phrase United States of America, the man who wrote Common Sense, the revolutionary voice of the American Revolution. So it's really astounding the way you can look at years of political history just using the cycle of one planet this way.
Wow, that is fascinating. I'd never heard all that put together. You know what's interesting too is Venus is going to go direct on September 6th, but it will still be in its shadow period. It will be around 19 Leo, around September 23rd when the Pluto station is, and Pluto will be stationing very close to opposition to the Sun of the United States.
Yes. Yeah. The country's in for some interesting time. Keep in mind also Saturn is about to go into Sagittarius. There's a few things that we need to point out about Saturn in Sagittarius. Number one, consistently Saturn in Sagittarius has coincided with economic depression or strong recessions. This was true in 1987. This is true in 1929. This is true back in the 1870s. Number two, given that the United States gets into really big wars when Uranus is in Gemini, Saturn's transit into Sagittarius is often a sort of a foreshadowing of whatever we're going to be looking toward in the year 2025, 10 years from now, when Uranus enters Gemini. So I think we're also going to start to see the nation sort of turn its attention towards whatever is going to be the big thing to focus on when things go down, so to speak.
Yeah, yes, that's. I agree. I think it'll be very, since you're talking about food a minute ago as well, I think it'll be very interesting what happens in a couple years when Uranus goes into Taurus.
Yeah.
See if we see changes in how livestock, cattle are treated and or produced as food, if there's different regulations or things in that area.
Well, you know what happened last time Uranus went into Taurus?
Fill us in.
Dust storms. Yeah.
I think I'll pass that.
the last time Uranus went into Taurus, 1934-35, this was the boll weevil, this was the dust storms that ruined things in the southern Midwest, places like Oklahoma. It created this wave of migration out to California. Sort of, if you think of Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, people were, kept in camps, treated like second-class citizens because they were trying to control the influx of fruit pickers into California. Very, very desperate time. Keep in mind that Uranus and Pluto were also square at that period, like they are now.
Interesting.
I shudder to imagine that this time around what could happen is that they don't have people in camps trying to get into California, but rather they have people in camps who are trying to get out of California.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, I did not know that about the dust storms, but that's really a pretty literal interpretation of Uranus and Taurus.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to take just a 30-second break here real quick.
Catch our breath.
And we will be right back with our guest, Nick Dagon Best.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With Insights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated. We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
Are you like a crazy person?
I'm quite sure they will say so.
Okay, and we are back with our guest, Nick Dagon Best. One of the other things I love you put up a lot is your music posts, looking at music history, and you do some stuff with time twins I've seen. What do you see happening in like the pop culture era, and maybe are there current time twins maybe that you've run across lately?
The thing about pop culture is I tend to not get as wrapped up in the current stuff as much because I wind up feeling a bit too much like a nosy neighbor or something. I follow politics because that's a different level. If you're poking in on that stuff that you're supposed to poke in on. But when it comes to pop culture, I prefer the bodies be cold, so to speak.
Right.
So I study a lot of historical stuff, and maybe some of it also just has to do with my focus, my own personal focus. But I tend to just look at pop culture history. The advantage being, I don't write about famous people because they're famous. I write about them because their lives are well documented. So like the time twin stuff you've seen that I've done, like there's one about Marilyn Monroe, Miles Davis, and Allen Ginsberg, who were all born the same week from each other. And, they're all people who lived and died. They lived out full lives or relatively full lives and died. And so I can look at their lives as an astrologer and discuss those lives with some degree of there's respect, but I can also be very personal about their details. It's not like they're still sort of living, breathing people who are just trying to make their way through the world like the rest of us, which is the way I think there's a certain amount of respect that an astrologer who does what I do has to have for people. The kind of work I do is kind of invasive and intimate, and so if someone's like a pop singer or an actor, and just because they're a millionaire and they're successful, it doesn't mean that I should be sort of poking my nose into their business to the degree that it gets done. I guess sometimes when scandals come up, I'll look into them a little bit, but only if the mood supports me. For the most part, I'm really engaged in a study that requires some detachment. So that's the safety of being a historian. There's distance and time. You're not talking about something that's happening outside your front door, but rather something that's like a ghost that might as well be mythical, even though it's something that actually happened.
Right. Yeah, and also it probably allows you to maybe detach from the current emotional atmosphere as far as what's going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. As your listeners know already from the way this conversation has gone, there's already enough sort of to have your eye on in the present day. And that is a weird headspace to be in as an astrologer. That is to say, to not be blind to it, to really understand the age in which you live and just where you are in the time spectrum and what you might be able to expect. It has been striking me You know, this Venus phase in particular is one that always coincides with an awakening for me. And I think I'm being reminded about the choice I made in becoming an astrologer and what I was signing on for when I did that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, because it seems like there's definitely lots of opportunities for change. There's much shifting going on now for certain.
Indeed.
So I see you are you were actually born in Montreal. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping you're a Canadians fan and not a Canucks fan.
I had a pretty amazing childhood. That our local hockey team always won the Stanley Cup every year when I was from about the age of 6 to 10, I think. We always won the cup, and that was a pretty pivotal time. But I've done some astrology study of hockey, but team sports is hard to study with astrology. You really need to have your eye on so many people at once. But I have studied some hockey history with astrology, and certainly the Canadians. In Montreal, hockey is it's not just a sport; it's a socio-political cornerstone of the whole island. For starters, in a city that for so long was segregated by language, where all the English people lived on the west side of the island and all the French people lived on the east side, the Montreal Forum, where the hockey games happened, was the only place where everyone was, you know, in the same building, under the same roof, for starters. So it's a place of communion. And it also just reflects the battles of the city. It reflects the sort of political climate of the city. It's hard to explain, but it's not just the sport there. It's something else.
Yeah. I've actually been a Canadiens fan since I was about 9, actually. So
you remember those years when we were kids. You and I are close to the same age. You remember how they just used to always win.
Yeah, Ken Dryden and Steve Shutt. Guy Lafleur.
Yeah,
absolutely. So
Ken Dryden was my hero as a kid. I got his birth time at one point. Well, just an approximate birth time, the best I could do. But he's an interesting Leo. He's a Sun, Saturn, Pluto Leo. Not unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger. But yeah, really interesting hockey goalie.
I believe Carey Price is a Leo, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
He is. We like our Leo goalies in Montreal.
Yes. Yeah, actually, funnily, I did an astro cartography chart on my point at one time, and my Venus MC line actually runs through Montreal, so I figured maybe that was why I was so connected to them.
Oh, that makes sense. You know, actually, speaking of hockey goalies and time twins, a time twin study that I really want to do, Patrick Roy was born the same day as Mario Lemieux.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have a birth time for Patrick Roy, but not Mario Lemieux. They're both born October 5th, 1965. So we have a birth time for Patrick Roy. I got it from his biography. But if I ever got a birth time for Mario Lemieux, that's two champion NHL hockey players born the same day, and I'd love to study their horoscopes together.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, arguably two of the 10 best ever.
Right. So, that's the kind of thing I'm really interested in. And that's the amazing thing about astrology is you really can use it to study anything. Like, if you're into hockey, use it to study hockey. If you're into, you know, fine art, use it to study fine art. I apply it to just about any little thing that I'm either really fascinated in or something like hockey where I have sort of a casual passing interest.
Yeah, that's what I love about it too. I've got notebooks full of charts for sports teams and players and events, as well as earthquakes, serial killers, movies, bands, album releases.
Awesome.
All kind of stuff. I'm totally into that too. So, I know it is your birthday, and you probably have lots of events planned. But how can people get a hold of you if they want to get a reading or purchase your Venus Retrograde?
My website is nickdaganbest.com, nickdaganbest.com. I have a Venus Retrograde workshop video for sale there. It's a 45-minute video. Also, my book is available in print and digital editions. Also, I recommend people check out my podcast, iloveastrologypodcast.com. Actually, as soon as this call is over, I'm about to tape my third episode, which should be up by tomorrow or Sunday. And, yeah, that's a fun little podcast as well. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Fantastic. Thank you for taking some time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day. And we appreciate you sharing some of your incredible knowledge with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and we would love to have you again on sometime in the future, maybe later this year, early next year, if you are
Sounds
open
good.
To that. Okay. Well, have a fantastic solar return, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
Okay, thank you, Nick. Okay, that was our guest, Nick Dagon Best, and you can find him out there at nickdagonbest.com, and his link is in the chat room, as well as on my Facebook page there. And so I think that's about going
to
do it.
Mark. Time to return to the ship.
Okay, thanks everybody for listening, and I am still lining up guests for the next couple weeks, so I will keep you informed of who's going to be on in the future here. I will have Theodore White the first Friday in September, and I got a few other people I'm working on for between now and then. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and everybody have a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon.